Session number 26579.
Mr. Clark, reel 8. So what happened then next? You managed to re-establish order.
We re-established complete control. And by the way, also, we had men, naval types, frog men. Every so often would check the underneath the ships.
Now what for?
They were thought the ships might be sabotaged for some reason or other.
Who by?
Well, we didn't actually know. We were never really informed, but they just said that these frogmen would be checking the ships just to make sure that nobody who shouldn't be there was there, like, you know. After about a week, the changeover took place again.
Now, did you manage to get the ships cleaned up?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Would do it? Would you do it?
Made them do it. We supplied the wherewithal, and we made them do it. And sometimes it was as a result of a cuff in the ear, like, you know. But they realised that we were going to stand no nonsense. And apparently, whoever spoke to these people in their language told them that we were going to make sure that the ship was cleaned up. And it was for their own good. There was a liaison book within there, explained it all to them, that the ship was a disgrace to humanity, virtually, you know, and it had to be cleaned up. Then when that was finished, the paratroopers came back aboard, and it was quite a sight. As we were marching off the ship, there was nothing but boos and yells and screams at us. And when the paras marched back on again, they marched on to cheers. So, you know, that said it all, virtually, like, you know. And then we went back up to barracks, and that was it again. But I believe that there were severe repercussions. These ships took off again and did arrive back in Hamburg. And what happened after that, I don't really know. But apparently, our commanding officer put a very, very scathing report in about all this.
About the parachute, Richard?
About the paras, yeah, yeah. Well, he couldn't get involved politically, really. But he did make his feelings very, very clear, that the state of the ships.
So what's next? What's the next thing you remember from your time there?
The next thing was that shortly after that, I started getting into trouble. But this time I'd become what they call a war substantive field corporal. In other words, only a court martial could bust you, or you could reduce yourself by request. Now, if you got into trouble whilst on a guard, your company commander couldn't deal with you. You had to be remanded to the CO. Now, the first bit of trouble I got into was that it was so ironic, it was unbelievable. We seemed to, at this stage, have a severe shortage of junior NCOs in the battalion, for some reason. And I was battalion headquarter guard this time. Mounted guard that morning, 8 o'clock, and we got two very good reports on the... Every night we took battalion orders, the state of the guard, you know, turnout, drill, very good, very good. So we got two VGs that day. Anyway, that afternoon, just after CO's orders at 12 o'clock, a young bloke, I'll never forget his name, Stevenson. He'd been a rifleman that morning. He'd only been in the army about a year, national service. And he came along to the guard room and said to me, "I've just been made up today to Lance Corporal." And he said, "I've been put in charge of the little bay guard tonight." And he said, "I haven't a clue." I said, "Okay." I got the guard orderly. He said, "You give us a couple of mugs of coffee, will you?" I took him through this room, other little room. And I explained everything he had to do. I said, "You got your jacket into the tailor?" "Yes, I've just put my jacket in the tailor from the strike right now." So I explained everything what he had to do from a guard mounting point of view. Well, he wasn't too bad at that because he'd already done a few of these guards. So I emphasised on him. I said, "Now look," I said, "keep on your toes, keep your men on their toes, because you will get a visit at least from the battalion orderly officer. You could even get a visit from the field officer." And I said, "Just make sure that your guard's on their toes." and explain the whole procedure to him. So anyway, he said, will you maybe let me know if the guard, if the Lord Loft is on his way? I said, no, I said, I'm not allowed to tell you anything. I said, now the thing about the Little Bay Camp was, you could see at night, or during the night, transport coming, because it was a big, long coastal road, narrow road, and then it went under a tunnel, cut out the rock, and then it emerged again. So I said to this guy, I said, now look, I said, all you got to do is just get your sentry. As soon as he sees the headlights of a jeep or whatever vehicle he's going to be travelling in, to alert you. But don't turn, and I emphasise, don't turn the guard out. You only turn the guard out when you're ordered to do so. Because some odd officer would come and would just say, everything all right, Corporal? Yes, thanks. Send the guard report and off we'd go. But others like to turn the guard out, you know. So anyway, he went away and I said, now look, I said, before you go, I said, any problem, bring them in, because we had a field telephone service between all the guards. I said, give me a buzz if you're not sure about anything or you want cleared up again. Don't hesitate to ring. Anyway, that morning about 1 o'clock, just the back of one, the other officer appears, turns out my guard. Checked it, quite happy. Yeah, okay, dismissed the guard and went back inside, signed the guard report. Now, this guy was called Lieutenant Ross. He was MTO, Motor Transport Officer. And driving him was a Corporal Brown, Baden Brown, was driving his jeep. He was also an MT Corporal. So, I heard this Ross saying to Brown, oh, by the way, Corporal Brown, I've got to go just nip into the MT office for something. He said, I'll be out in a few minutes. Now, I'm standing at the window. The window's right up now. I thought Brown had gone, but he hadn't gone. So I picked up the telephone, and I said to this young Stevenson, I said, now look, are you quite happy? But oh, yeah, no problem. He said, I'm all right. I said, well, that's fine then. Okay, just be alert, that's all. Phone down. And the next thing, about 3 o'clock, this Lieutenant Ross came storming out of the guard room. Why did you alert the Little Bay Guard? I said, I never alerted the Little Bay Guard, sir. He said, when I got there, he said, the guard was turned out. They were standing lined up with the guard commander reporting to me as I got out of the jeep. And I said, he shouldn't have been, sir. I said, but he said, well, you did speak to the guard commander, didn't you? I said, that's quite correct, sir. He said, yes. He said, Corporal Brown heard you warning him of my approach. I said, sir, I'm sorry. I said, Corporal Brown misheard me. I said, and I told him what happened. I told him the whole story, what happened. Well, anyway, he said, you've got a report. So I went in front of the company commander, blah, 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 CO, like, no. And this Corporal Brown came up and he swore my life away. He absolutely swore my life away. Said, and this young Stevenson came up, evidence for me, like, you know. And he said, there's no way that Corporal Clark did warn me, he said. In fact, he said, I made the mistake, sir. What had happened was, when the sentry saw the vehicle, the jeep approaching, with the headlights on, he immediately shouted, stand to the guard. Guard turned out. So naturally, the guard turns out, and they're standing there like a load of wallies, as the officer gets out of his jeep. And that was how it all came about. So, well, I could tell from the body language of the colonel that I was getting nowhere. So I said, well, sir, I said, I don't see why I'm standing here in front of you. I said, because I said, when you decide to visit companies in the battalion or guards in the battalion, the adjutant rings the people concerned to say that you're on your way. And I happened to look at the adjutant and he stiffened. You know, his eyes popped out of his head. And I said, not only that, sir, I said, when the governor of Algeciras decides to visit the Rock, the Four Corners Guard are warned, 4-1, that he's on his way. And the guards turned out ready for him, like, no. Well, that was it. The OCO said, look, severe reprimand, march him out, like, no. So, that's right, yeah. So that was severe rep. That was my Spanish thing we'd taken away, visa taken away. Then, about another month later, another incident in the guard, where I allowed a member of the guard to leave the guard room to nip into Nappy. Now, what happened was, this chap, the sentry, had given the guard orderlies his money. The guard orderlies, those two guys, used to get all the food and everything and get Nappy breaks in. And these two chaps had gone and got the Nappy breaks in for the guard at back at 10 o'clock. About 10:45. Because they then went away, have a quick break, and then get the food from the dining room, the cookhouse, to bring it down to the guard room. Anyway, when this lad came off duty at 11 o'clock, he said, where's my nappy break, Corporal? I said, was it not there? He said, no. That's where the missile got. So I looked, I said, look, the nappy's just still open. Go and get your tea and cake, whatever it is, and bring it straight back to the guard room here. And just as he disappears in the door of the nappy, stand to the guard. Guard turned out. It was the acting field officer of the day, a bloke called Captain Riddle Webster. So, maybe if I'd shut my mouth, I might have got away with it. But being me, I reported one member of the guard indisposed, otherwise guard present, ready for your inspection, sir. So I inspected the guard, got into the guard room, and just as we got into the guard room, this guy came in with his cup of tea and his cake. So the Riddle Webster said to me, he said, about this chap that's indisposed, why was he indisposed? And I explained to him, I said, sir, I said, the guard orderlies had omitted to bring his nappy break. I said, and when I saw the nappy open, I told him to thunder over and get a cup of tea and come straight back here. But he said, he's not allowed to leave the guard room. I said, well, I beg to differ, sir. I said, paragraph 6 of the guard order states that one man may quit the guard room with the guard commander's permission. But he said, it's go to the toilet, isn't it? I said, I just need to quit the guard room to go to the toilet. So I said, there's a toilet through there. I said, it's quite unambiguous that the guard can leave with my permission. And I gave him this permission. Well, you'll be on a report. Oh, I thought, Jesus, here we go again. No, here we go. So once again, gets up, and I take the guard orders up, and it was so plain. One man may quit the guard room without the guard command, with the guard commander's permission. But he wouldn't have it. The CO wouldn't have it. And another severe dig.
This is Brickman still?
Brickman. Still Brickman, yeah.
So he reprimanded again?
Severely reprimanded. So a severe reprimand. When you went in front of the CO, you either got detention or severe reprimands, like, you know.
Now, how did you feel about these two? Because neither of them seem particular. Firstly, they don't seem much of, and secondly, they seem a bit trivial.
Had I come up against this problem, say, 3 or 4 years later, I would have asked for a court-martial. Because you could demand a court-martial. But I was a bit young and naive then, and I just had to, I thought, well, I can't fight this lot, you know. Anyway, the third incident that happened was I stated a falsehood to the Sergeant Major. I stated a falsehood to save a rifleman's neck.
Now tell me about that
story.
Now
this rifleman, he was on the duty company this week, and this rifleman, a bloke, Beggs McConaughey, I'll never forget young Beggs, he was a smashing bloke, National Service lad, little typical little thick-set Glasgow guy. So he'd been detailed for a fatigue party, which I had to parade every day, like, you know, and send them off. So the party went off. I forget which party was on there, but I checked to make sure they were okay and sent them off to their duty. Then they came back for lunch. And when they came back from lunch, when the lunch break was finished, I went to parade them and send them off, see? So I never checked the party properly. It was my fault. I was daft. But what happened was, I went back to the company office after I sent this party off. I'll tell you what happened. I checked them, and off they went. But when I get into the office, this bloke McConaughey had ducked back to the barrack room. He'd only a week to do before he was getting demobbed. So I went to the office, but half an hour later, Company Sergeant Major came in, the wee Führer, Bill Braith, he came in. He said, Corporal Clark, he said, why is McConaughey on his fatigue party? I said, he is on his fatigue party. He said, I've just found him lying in his bed there, no? And I actually forget what actually transpired, but it came to the point where I had told a lie. So I was nicked. And once again, commanding officer. So he said to me, this is the third time within about 3 months you've been up in front of me, Colonel Clark said. Are you prepared to accept my punishment? Oh no, are you prepared to revert to the rank of permanent rifleman or be tried by court-martial? Well, the word court-martial frightened the life out of me, you know. I said, I'll revert to the permanent rank of rifleman. So, and that was one of the times when I came out, the RSM Elwood said, quick, into my office. So I turned to his office like, you know. He said, don't take it too much to heart. He said, you're a young fella yet, he said. And he said, nothing's permanent about it. He said, you can come back someday and become an NCO, like, you know. He said, so don't take it too much to heart. He said, now, he said, as you know, my batman a week ago got 4 years in prison for rape. Would you like to come as my batman? So I said, yeah, okay, I'll do that, like, you know. Now, his house, his married quarter was actually in the barracks, just near the entrance, the exit to the barracks. So I reported down the next morning, took my stripes down, reported the next morning, and became RSM Elwood's batman.
Now, well, how did you feel in yourself?
I mean, really down.
I mean, did you take Elwood's advice and sort of put it behind you, or did you let it fester? I mean,
I let it fester for a few weeks. I started going out to the canteen at nights and drinking. And the thing was, Elwood, I had to report to his house every morning. His wife, Louise, she was a lovely little woman. She came from my hometown, Hamilton. And she used to virtually do all his kit, because she'd been in India with him and everything, like, you know. So I had bits and everything. All I had to do in the morning was go in and wash the dishes, breakfast dishes, wash the kitchen out, the floor, kitchen floor. And I was just a houseboy, you know. Which meant, in effect, in the afternoon I had nothing to do. So I'd just sneak out of the camp, sneak out of the barracks and go down to the big nappy club in Gibraltar, have a few beers. But then, eventually, you know, common sense prevails, like, you know, and just before we left for Trieste, I sobered up and got back. I requested to go back to my company again, which by now was commanded by another officer, Major A.C.A. McKinnon. A.C.A. McKinnon.
Now, what was he like?
Big, dour, Presbyterian Scot. Another no-nonsense man. Big, well-made guy. He was very, very... He was very God-fearing man. You wouldn't think he was the type of guy that could command jocks. You know, he was totally different from the average man or NCO in his company, you know. But once again, excellent company commander. He had a very bad wound in his top left shoulder, just below his shoulder blade, where he... So the story goes, and I don't doubt it. He was captured in Italy, him and his batman. And although the Germans took his weapon and ammunition off him, he still had a grenade hidden. And at a certain spot, he pulled the pin out of the grenade and shouted to his batman, run! And he threw the grenade among the Germans. And as he turned to run, him and the batman was killed. And he got badly wounded in the shoulder. But he managed to escape, he got away, and they returned to the Allied lines, you know?
So he took over command?
So he took over command of the company, and he was, as I say, he was very strict, and he was very training conscious. He was all for training. So we found ourselves doing lots of weapon training, and marching up and down the rock. he would organise route matches up and down the rock, and no problem. It was, and just that was just before we left Gibraltar.
Now, were there any sort of preparations before you left, or was it just a routine move?
The whole thing was strictly routine. Everything was checked by the colour sergeants, you know, prior to moving out. And this is what I say, that the quartermaster that we had, Luggy Bunce, he brooked no nonsense. Every week he checked every barrack room, along with every colour sergeant. And this was the reason why, when we were leaving Gibraltar behind, that everything was in such good shape.
Now, how did you get to...
Just before we left...
Oh, sorry, carry on.
Just before we left Gibraltar, two or three months before we left, a new CO took over to replace Brickman. And the new CO was called Lieutenant Colonel Buchanan Dunlop. Buchanan-Dunlop.
What was he like?
Lovely man. Totally different from... He was the opposite from the
Brickman.
Totally opposite. But once again, the battalion was in such good nick, discipline-wise, living-wise, that he didn't have any problems. He was a much more easier-going CO. He then got the battalion on parade shortly after he took over and said, look, he said, the battalion is now under orders to move to Trieste, up in the north of Italy. And he said, I'll be going up there shortly to check on the barracks and the area and what have you. Come back and let you know what it's all about. In between that time, there was nothing much happening in the battalion. Anyway, off Buchanan the lot went. We used to call him BD. Off BD went. And he came back from Trieste and he was absolutely furious. Absolutely livid. We were relieving the 1st Battalion, the Royal Scots. And he told us that he was refusing to take his battalion up to Trieste until they had the barracks sorted out. The barracks were apparently in one hell of a state. No windows, doors. It was just as if the whole battalion had, the discipline had gone in the battalion for several months. They were in such a dreadful state that Buchanan de Lop flew then to the War Office and demanded that this lot be sorted out before he brought our battalion up to take over. Now, as a consequence of this, the CO of the 1st Royal Scots was given his bowler hat. He was kicked out of the army because the War Office, or I think it was the Quartermaster General's department, came out and had a look at it, and they said, "Oh no, this is beyond the pale. No regiment can take over this lot." So Gilbertson, Lieutenant Colonel Gilbertson of the Royal Scots, he was bowler hatted, and the promise was made that immediately every effort would be made to get the barracks back up into shape. But in the meantime, Colonel Buchanan the lot must move the Cameronians at the date stated. So that, in effect, was what happened. When we arrived there...
Now, when did you arrive?
We arrived on the... Let me see now. I think it was New Year's Eve. 49. New Year's Eve, 49.
Right.
We'd spent 2 years in Gibraltar. 47 to 49.
So it's December 49 you arrived in Trieste, or the last day of it.
December will do fine.
And how did you get there?
We went by troop ship. Now, I'm going to... I think it was a Lancashire, HMT Lancashire, what we moved up in, which was Rolls Royce compared to the Almanzora. Much better ship, bigger... Much more facilities, better food. better all round. We arrived in Trieste, and true to their word, the powers that be had got a move on the barracks, and things were starting to be put right.
Now, what were the name of these barracks? It's just gone out of your head. We'll come back to it, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And what state were they in when you arrived?
It was painfully obvious they'd been in a dreadful state, but I would say that when we arrived there, there were 50% back to normal, but the work was still going on. And the dreadful thing about it was this, that Trieste was subjected to a dreadful wind called the Bora, which used to come down from the Alps, and it was a dreadful wind. It was absolutely, in fact, it was so strong that in the main streets, the authorities at a certain time of the year would erect chains so that people could hang on. And unfortunately, a lot of our windows hadn't been fully replaced. So therefore, some of these nights that we've got, they issued extra blankets from the QM stores to compensate for the lack of windows so that we could keep ourselves warm. And we just had to settle in. Now, we were confined to barracks for a week. Now, this is normal drill, but I should have mentioned this in Gibraltar. We're also confined for the first week in Gibraltar.
Now, why is this?
This is to make sure that you were acclimatised to the barracks, got used to the barracks, plus the fact that your turnout, when you were allowed out, was immaculate, whether it be civilian clothes or uniform. And we spent the first week in barracks in Trieste. And a very funny incident happened the very first night.
What was that?
I was allowed out. It was a Friday night we were allowed out, the first night. I'll always remember, we got paid in the morning. And then we're all spruced up that night, going down to the big nappy club in the town. So this friend of mine, Cottle Edwards, little Eddie, by this time, by the way, I've been made up to corporal again. Been made up with corporal. And as we went down the road, going down this main street, by the way, Rossetti Barracks.
Rossetti Barracks,
yeah.
Right.
As we left Rossetti Barracks, going down the road, we saw this lovely girl in front of us. We're rapidly catching up with her. She had lovely long black hair down to her waist. Now, during that week, we had been picking up snatches of Italian from the civilians who worked in the camp, in the barracks. And as we drew level with this girl, I said, Buonasera, Chichi. And she immediately stopped. She turned round. She said, Al buonasera, ye, I come for Aberdeen. She was a nappy girl. So when we got to the nappy club, my friend Eddie decided to take off and left me with this girl from the nappy. And we had a smashing night that night. The nappy club was beautiful. On the ground floor, they had a lovely restaurant and then a bar. And the menu there was fantastic. You could get all sorts of food, the British food, like, you know. And then upstairs was a lovely big dance hall where a Friday and a Saturday night there was a 7 or 8 piece band played, and it was very, very well attended by the soldiers.